All right. Left hand. Right hand. Left hand. Right hand. Jump. Oh, no, I fell because I was tired. We're playing Jusant. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are here for our first installment of the Wheel of Indies, where we are going to cover an independent video game each week for the next several weeks. My name is Drew, and I love video games, but I need the weird little blue blob guy that hides in my backpack, Miles!
What's up, buddy?
You raised your hand like, hey, we are an audio podcast.
I do this with any. I mean, we have a video component in that Drew and I are talking to each other. We're not. I know some podcasts just like record that as well. I have no desire to do that, but I still gonna wave to my buddy, who I don't get to hang out with IRL very often. So
very true. Very true. So we are here to talk about video games for the next few weeks, and we decided it would be fun to do kind of a random number generator Wheel of Indies, and the first game that came up on the wheel is the game Jusant by Studio Don't Nod, best known for probably Life is Strange is their most famous
game. That is their I mean, Vampire did do pretty well, if I'm not mistaken. It was kind of mixed. One of the reasons that I wanted, there's several reasons why I wanted to do this challenge, and it's something that Drew and I have been kind of waffling on doing, not waffling is the wrong word, but like kind of strategizing for quite some time. We knew we wanted to do some video game stuff because we were both pretty aware that we tend to do a lot of TV and movies. It's frankly the easiest thing to do currently. But it's something we're aware of, and I do want to get to, you know, where we can do more video games, more comics, stuff like that to kind of even things out. But not only that, Drew and I often joke, if you talk to us on our Discord, about our massive backlogs.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, like, I'll get in these ruts. Anyone who's listened to this show for some time knows that, like, you know, both of us have a lot of interest, and I tend to get, like, whole hog into my interest. So sometimes music and music consumption takes most of my efforts, or comics, or I'll get super into like just going against all of my to be read pile, or, you know, obviously I'm always watching movies and TV shows and stuff. So, I mean, those things tend to sometimes take precedent because the time sinks a little differently. Reading is usually the first to kind of slag a little bit, but games, surprisingly enough, sometimes do, because of, you know, life and podcasting and social life and
a lot of times video games, despite the fact that many video games have an online component, a ton of video games are really kind of solitary activities. Obviously there's arguments for that, so don't sit, you know, there's couch co-op games, I know, but most of the time today, when you're playing a video game, you are playing a video game, whether you're playing online with somebody or not, you're playing a video game by yourself. And when you have a partner or a family that, and you know, you balance time for yourself and you balance time with other people, and it's tough to make the time sometimes to get into a game, especially when there are so many games.
Right. And Drew and I both are like, we both subscribe to Humble Bundle, which means we get several, you know, titles a month.
Even more games that I'm not going to play every month.
Well, that there's plenty of games that I've bought on a Steam sale or on a PSN sale or just on sale, like at a big box store, that I haven't gotten around to, or, you know, oh, that's on sale, I do want to play that game, or I cannot wait for that game to come out, and then I buy it day one, and then I don't even crack it open. And that happens even to games that I am actively obsessed with. Marvel vs. Capcom, unfortunately. Also, as much as I love collecting on the Switch is not the best thing for fighting games. Them controllers are just not it. No. Hopefully they will make better Pro controllers when the Switch 2 comes around. Because those things are clickety-clackety. But I wanted to do something for us so that we could actively dig, obviously won't make a dent, but go into our backlogs and force us to play some of these games that we just haven't made the time for. And that's one of the great things that I've loved about doing this podcast for the last decade, is sometimes it forces me to make time to do things that I've been meaning to do. Whether it be something that like I didn't know I was going to love, like Orphan Black or Homestuck, or things that I thought I would be more into, like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, that I just wasn't.
Going back to some old school episodes, man.
Yeah, these are all, I mean, well, because these days we do what we want to do.
Fair, that's true.
And we do experience things that we hadn't before, but we were much more in control than back on the listener submitted days. So I really am kind of relishing this opportunity to do something like this for video games. And yeah, our first game was Jusant, which is a game that was developed by Don't Nod, who, like Drew said, famously for the Life is Strange series, as well as some others. This one I remember getting a lot of really positive review from players and critics, but not selling insanely well.
Yeah,
I know Don't Nod said it kind of didn't meet their expectations.
It is sort of mid-80s Metacritic scores. So mid-80s, 8 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
9 out of 10s. It's pretty good. And it's the Jusant is a French word that means like a waning tide, like a tide going out, basically. And it is a game that is all about, despite the fact that it's about a tide, no, it's about climbing. And our main character, our sort of really only character that we encounter throughout the entire game, is walking towards this gigantic mountainous spire amongst just this dry land and all these boats that have that are just kind of, you know, wrecked on this dry area. And basically takes the game is climbing up this mountain and finding the remnants of the past in these messages and notes and emails. I think they're emails.
Either that or it's just like a bulletin board where they just like old school message board style.
There are
little creatures that you do encounter in the game. Mostly are there sometimes you can kind of take advantage of them for strategic reasons, but like Drew said, that you are mostly climbing in this game. That is your main thing. This is a puzzle platformer more than just a straight platformer, because it's less jumping and more climbing.
And the puzzle is, you know, there are sometimes multiple paths to get around areas, and you have to. So you're in it's climbing like rock climbing. It reminds me a lot of a game called Go Home, I think it was what it was called on the PlayStation.
Grow Home,
that's what it was, where you are a robot that is trying to climb up a bunch of stuff. Although if your robot falls, he's totally fine when he hits the ground. But in this game, not so much. But in that,
I never fell, so I wouldn't know.
I would jump and then not catch properly.
Did you not have your rope hooked up?
I did, so I didn't fall far, but
okay.
Yeah. But basically it's the way the game works is your right trigger controls your right arm and hand, and your left trigger controls your left arm and hand, and it's kind of trigger, 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 move in the directional stick in the
right
area of finding a path. There is a stamina mechanic that you have that
mirrors the Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom kind of stamina bar, where it's like a green cursor.
Except you can kind of hold on for a second and rest to regain stamina while you're climbing, which you can't do in in those games.
In Zelda, yeah.
Yeah. And basically, it's very colorful. It's very stylistic. It's as you kind of go up through this and sort of get all these nods to what is happening at the time where this is, and you don't really know how far back it is when you go there. You don't know if you're going to meet anyone, if anyone is still left in this place. It's a very, very interesting thing as you sort of go through this game and use your little blue buddy that you've got in a bag with you to sort of reignite nature around this tower, this spire. It's simple, it's stylistic, and it made me so motion sick I couldn't play the game.
I felt so bad.
I don't know why this game did this to me. I do not get motion sickness in real life. I don't get motion sickness in VR unless I'm doing a very specific thing in VR. But for some reason, this game made me so ill that as I think about playing it, I'm feeling bad. Like, that is how weird it was. And it kind of messed up my whole day. I played for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I decided to take a break, and I couldn't ever go back to it. And it sucks because I was enjoying the game. I was having a good time, but I can't do that to myself again.
No, absolutely not.
So this is where I don't have a ton to say about it other than what I've already said, because I just didn't get a chance to play that much of it because it just took me out. I feel weak. I feel weak. I feel like Arnold Schwarzenegger is somewhere telling me to be a better person, and I've let him down. I don't know what Arnold Schwarzenegger has to do with rock climbing, but if anybody's going to tell me I'm weak, it seems like it'd be him. But he's also a pretty positive dude, so I don't know. But yeah, I will say I got as far as activating the first. So when you start the game, you kind of look up like it. And it uses perspectives really well. And you're on basically the ground and you look up and there's this white tower that's got like this circular structure on it. And that's your goal. Nothing is ever said out loud about it, but you kind of go up, and as you continue, you see that tower is getting closer, and you look down and you see that the ground is getting farther away, and it's very cool, the perspectives of these things that are changing. I don't know how much of that is false perspective versus like how much of the thing that they actually designed, but it plays off, and once you get up to that tower, you're like, oh, I'm here. And along the way, you're finding little abandoned areas where one place was like a bar or a restaurant, and they're complaining about how nobody comes down to where they are anymore, and they're petitioning the government to build a little patio that people can sit out on, and obviously it doesn't happen. And then there are these ruins that they're investigating that have to deal with other stuff, and yeah. What did you think, Rob?
Once you told me about your experience, I didn't want to go too much further because I kind of wanted to keep our experiences somewhat similar. I had found out about this after I had kind of gotten well into chapter two. But the more I think about this game, the more I love it. This game is so interesting, and it's one of those things that we do get sometimes, but we don't get enough of these games that, well, they'll tell you how to play the game. That is all they will tell you. It is a very meditative experience in a way that a lot of games don't dare to be anymore. And I am... honestly, playing this game reminds me of playing a Team Ico game, that where you are thrust into a world that you have no context for. You don't know what your goals are. You don't know much about the world around you. All you have is to explore. And that is something that is an important part of both Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. They are very different games, but they, and as well as The Last Guardian, but they all share this one thing where the game kind of forces you to, whether you mean to or not, take the perspective of the character. And the character is left purposefully nameless and androgynous. There is, as far as I can tell, no assigned gender to the main character.
There's not even any spoken dialogue in the
right. Not that I had seen so far. That could change the more I get to the game. And I think this is a purposeful thing to make this game as malleable as possible to anyone who intends to play it. The character is ethnically ambiguous. Their gender is ambiguous, and so is their reason for being there. You don't know why you are approaching this large tower, and in fact, you don't even know you really have a little buddy. Like you get a little hint,
get a little peek at first,
in the opening cutscene. But once your little buddy comes out and really cute, kind of has a boy in his blob kind of vibe to me. The thing is, you could do yourself a disservice and just try to I'm going to zip up this tower in any way possible. Or you could stop taking the sights and kind of be inspired by what the tower is asking you to do. I don't know why you're climbing this tower. And even the little tidbits of culture and correspondence that you get, they certainly give you hints that a civilization was here, but you still don't know what's happened. You don't know what's going on. And I still don't know why we're on this tower yet. And I love that. I absolutely love that. I remember when I was working for the local newspaper when Shadow of the Colossus came out. And I remember just kind of like waxing poetic about what a special experience it was to kind of go into a game where it's almost like a mirror. Like what you want to get out of it is what you put in. And I really love that. Unfortunately, this game did not do very well and the production team was dismantled and reassigned throughout Don't Nod. But I love the idea that there are still games that feel like you're playing like a poem. Yeah. that has something to say per se, but it's not necessarily like, oh, well, this is a pointed commentary about, you know, current event politics, like metaphor might be.
It leaves it up to interpretation. It gives you enough stuff that you get to make your own determination of things. And I did, and I won't tell you in case you want to go back and finish this game, I did read up, you know, kind of what the rest of the game is. And you do find out more about the world. But based on the commentary that I was reading on Reddit about the ending to this game, there are certainly differing opinions about what actually happens at the end.
Which is great. I love that. Yeah. Like there are not enough experiences, especially in this medium, which is wild because it's an interactive medium. It should be one of the primary things that happens, but because the AAA kind of juggernaut has a chokehold over the trends, and one of the reasons why I want us to play indie games anyway, because so many indie games buck these trends, and that's what makes them special. Yeah. Look, a AAA studio wasn't going to come out with Balatro. Like they weren't going to come out with a poker roguelike. Like no, absolutely not. That was going to be some maverick. And I make it sound like more badass than.
Do we have to take Balatro off the wheel now because we talked about it? I did put it on wheel, but we haven't rolled the wheel yet, so I don't know what game's going to pop up next.
I'm just saying that like there are things in indie games that remember what video games used to do, and video games used to like look. We've always had big IP games that's always been part of the medium, but we also the big studios used to get weird. Like, there are entire Final Fantasy entries that are really weird.
I think back to the late PlayStation 2 era a lot as the inspiration for the indie game movement. Because...
Oh, Because absolutely.
There was this little game that came out, and it was only at the time like $20 when every other game was $50. And it was put out by Konami, one of the biggest video game companies of the time. They've waned in recent years when it comes to some of their production, but they're still pretty big, and they're still a pretty well-known game. And that game was a little one called Katamari Damacy. Or Damachi, depending on, you know, how you pronounce, whatever.
And it was unfiltered genius.
It was so weird. And the people that made that game have gone on to make other just weird little games. But it's that idea that it doesn't have to be this big thing. It can just be a concept that's executed well. And I think that's what we have here. I do wonder, because I don't know how much more of an ability you get, I do wonder how long the overall experience of the game is versus, because I could see the climbing becoming too repetitive if there's not enough other stuff to it. But if it's not that long of a game, I don't know. That's again.
Yeah, so the general consensus is that that's about 4.5 hours in length. And you can if you're trying to get everything, you can spend 8 hours, but that's also a fluid number. I spent a bunch of time just dicking around, like trying to attain a place that I'm not even sure if you can go or if you're supposed to go, but I was trying to do it anyway because it looked neat. It's in the second chapter, beginning of the second chapter. There's a little bit where there's like a little ledge. It's got one of these little clay like piles that you can collect or complete. I don't know if you found one of those in the first chapter.
I found a few of them in chapter one. They're basically, if you think about like the pile of stones from, well, I'm going to say from Moana, but I'm assuming they are a Maori kind of custom where it's like you place a stone on top of it's a pile of stones that sort of indicate how long generations have gone there. There's a few of those. There are these murals that you can find in different in different spots. I did find one of those.
Seashells.
Miles, did you find the bathroom? There is a point when you get to the top of your first goal tower, and you are climbing around, and the way that it's not just a staircase at that point. You have to go around, and there's broken down staircases. You have to climb around, and then you look over and you see a place that you don't know how to get to it. There's not really an easy way to get to it. So you keep climbing up, and it's like, oh, I could continue and do the story, or I could go see what this little spot that I saw that I missed because I didn't know how to get to it. And so you end up climbing down and, you know, catching yourself and using this, and you swing into it, and it's a cool thing, and you get in there, and it's literally, you know, a seat with some planks and a hole over off the side of the tower, like a medieval bathroom. And that's what it is. It's a freaking bathroom. It's like, man, I'm so glad there's not even a like story element in there.
Nobody
left an ancient magazine or something in there for you to read to reward yourself for finding the bathroom.
But that's what's so special about a game like this, is it's details like that where it's like, it doesn't, well, yeah, you can burn through 4.5 hours and just finish this game, but it's not really asking you to do that. Like, it really does want you to kind of like wander around, and really to your own discretion. Like, if you didn't find the bathroom, doesn't mean you're a bad player, doesn't mean you just didn't care to look there. And that's nothing. But if you did, you're rewarded by this funny little anecdote of like, oh yeah, I found the squatty potty.
Yeah. There's not an achievement for it. Nothing pops up on the screen like, you really gotta go or something like that.
Yeah.
Which would have been easy for them to make a joke about, but they didn't do that, which I respect.
Well, and that's what makes me think that they really were all in on this idea of this kind of meditation where, like, yeah, it's a funny detail, but that's between you and the game.
Yeah.
You don't have to broadcast, oh yeah, I found the crapper. Like, that's not like that. That is more of like, oh, this is cool. And it also kind of world builds. Like, of course there's a bathroom there. There should be. If people were working and living in these giant towers, they probably need a place to go that, you know, isn't insanely impossible to get to.
Well, although it is insanely impossible to get to Well, you're
at
there.
This point, yes, but in the height of this culture, I don't think it was.
There was probably a bridge.
And when we see that, there was probably a bridge. And that's what I think I really love about games like this, because, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head with the PS2 era comment. And I would even argue also PS1. Obviously, games were, you know, certainly, you know, the amount that you would spend on one game is the amount a studio would spend in 2 years back in 2001. Yeah. But at the same time, it kind of does give you this idea of like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be spending the GDP of a small nation on a video game. What if we separate this into like 10 or 20 mid-range titles and bring those back? Like, let's bring back the weird mid-range title and like have games like this. Yeah, they may not all do well. I mean, Jusant didn't. But at the same time, people are going to be talking about like in... Jusant is primed for discovery. I've had many friends who play a lot of indie games who all played it and loved it and talk about it and evangelize it. People are going to be talking about this than whatever iteration of Call of Duty came out that year in 10 years. And that's, I mean, I am throwing shit at Call of Duty because I don't care about Call of Duty. But at the same time, it's also like, yeah, it's language part of the machine. You get the same thing every single time. Like, it's... You know, it's whatever. But that's one of the reasons that I wanted to do this challenge, too, is like experience these indie games. Both you and I, you know, we've been to PAX. We've talked to these people. We have played their games. We love the creative spirit involved in indie games. We just don't always get to make time for it.
Yeah.
And I think what's so cool about this game is even the mechanics that I thought was irritating at first. I was low-key pissed that I had to like do the trigger of like, all right, squeeze right and hold and then let go. And but as I got into it, it became part of like the journey. It's really weird because like it's not Stockholm syndrome. I was like, oh, I see, they want you to deliberately physically feel like you're part of the character and it invests in every movement.
And it's pretty fluid. It's not like
It's very fluid at first.
The hardest part was the first jump you had to make. I fell so many times just doing that because I was overdoing it, trying to grab on.
Yep.
And then I realized, oh, this is much simpler if I just kind of let the game be the game and do that.
Also, because I was playing on my Steam Deck with a PS5 controller, for whatever reason, it kept saying press X, and it didn't mean X. at all.
This is why,
and that was annoying.
That is the scourge of some games when you play through Steam Deck pick up on the PS5 button prompts, and some don't, and some you have to kind of jump through a couple of hoops to get it to work. I played this though the game did come out on PS5 and Windows. It's an Xbox Game Pass game, and I played it on my Series X, so
I had it from, I guess, a Humble Bundle because it's in my library. I didn't purchase it.
It is from Humble. It's from Humble like last month.
Oh yeah,
it's
from last month.
It's from last month. So I have it redeemed there as well, but I decided to play on Xbox because I don't know, for some reason it felt better.
No, and a game like this is like, I love a game that like takes the simple mechanic that would be a one button situation in another game and makes it like, no, we want you to be purposeful with every movement you make. And that is a specific artistic choice that I think is extremely important to what you get out of the game. Because when you think more about where you're moving in terms of climbing and what that means, and again, this all goes back to like, this game wants you to stop and smell the roses. Even when it comes to the actual gameplay, like it wants you to meditate on everything. And I really miss game experiences like that. Like love that feeling in Shadow of the Colossus when you're first kind of getting out there and you don't know where you're supposed to be going other than like, oh, if I put my sword in the sunlight, it points this direction and there's a big old monster. I guess I gotta go kill it. Like,
you know, Miles, it might behoove me to say this. I've not played Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, son of a... All right, well, that's going to come up at a later date then.
I own it.
And you're not playing the remake either, so...
I own it. I haven't played it.
No. We'll play the proper version. I did not know you never played that game.
Yeah, I bought it on. I might actually have the remake or the remaster or whatever version it was, but yeah.
Oh, so there's a remake, and there was an HD remaster on PS3 that was coupled with a HD remaster of Ico. And the Shadow of the Colossus remake, I think, kind of came out with very little fanfare in 2018. I say that, and then I'm looking at on. The game received critical acclaim, so maybe just came out and I just didn't know. It didn't seem like it sold very well, but I mean, I don't know.
I don't know what version I have. I'm sure it's on PlayStation Plus, but I don't have
it. It's a phenomenal game. I think some people who love the original game just feel like they kind of may have, with the new control scheme, kind of robbed players of some of the experience. But I mean, Shadow of the Colossus is a phenomenal game. Excellent experience, 10 out of 10 game. But I think that's what I love about this game, is it feels like a spiritual, I don't want to say successor, but certainly descendant of the mission statements made by Team Ico with, or Ico, I'm not sure.
I've always heard Ico, but I don't know.
It could be Ico.
That's correct.
I found myself, the more I played it, even though I was kind of getting frustrated in my own little misadventures, I miss games like this. I miss games that are meditative and thoughtful and don't want to harangue you with, like, you know, you're Jack Valance and you've been betrayed by the Syndicate and you're going to kick their butt. Also, they killed your girlfriend. You know, it's these typical,
Did you say Valance or Balance?
It doesn't matter.
Because I know a Jack Balance, and I think that's very funny.
that is funny. But it's like, I mean, obviously, I love AAA games. Well, I have a love-hate relationship with AAA games, but like, conceptually, I don't hate them necessarily, but they have become very anti-art as of late. And I
don't know. That's a whole other conversation. Because I think
it is a whole other conversation. I'm being very general. But I do feel like the AAA landscape has been a little bit poisonous in the last 10 years, personally. And I say this as someone who buys plenty of AAA games, some of my favorite games of all time are AAA games. So it's not like I'm like a hermit here.
I started playing a AAA game earlier today.
I mean, I'm in the middle of Metaphor, which I guess it's the double A.
I think that's more double A.
Atlas is double A.
I think in 2025, a turn-based JRPG is not a triple A game.
I'm not talking about what kind of game. What? How much money did they put into this game?
Oh, they put a lot of money into the game.
Yeah, exactly. We can't just discern because it's somewhat niche these days. Like, no. Like, I don't know. These days I would call Atlas AAA, even though I would be very happy saying they're AA too, because they do kind of put out a game a year.
I would say that, like, Persona 6 will be a AAA game. Metaphor maybe AA, but I don't know.
I don't know.
I can't find budget numbers in my Googling real fast. So,
like, Catherine, I'd be comfortable calling a AA game. But Persona 3 even.
Well, the Persona 3 remaster, though, the Persona 3 remake.
I'm talking about the PS2 game, FES or whatever. I don't know. Atlas is in an odd spot because Atlas is so weird. There is a development side of Atlas and there's a publishing side of Atlas. And those are very different beasts.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to put... I hate to put the conversation back on Jussant and only to end it. Because I just didn't get enough time to play more of this game, I don't have a ton more to say about it. And that's not the game. Well, it's kind of the game's problem because it made me motion sick. But I don't know that that's the game problem or whether it was a weird frame rate issue. It's strange stuff.
So I guess, it is tougher to talk about this with you, which is like the whole reason we do this. Freaking show.
Sorry,
because I
bro.
Didn't want to.
Sorry,
well,
bro.
No. No. I didn't mean it in an accusatory way. I wanted to talk about the artistic aspect of it with you, but it sucks that you did have this experience, because like there's so much of this game to appreciate. I mean, I love how it's colored. It feels like someone purposely made a PS2 game that had like the best physics a PS2 game could possibly have. But like, the game does remind me of a bygone era that I think is sorely missed because of its rampant creativity and weirdness that we just don't see enough and only see in indie games. Which is why I'm so excited to continue doing this challenge and playing the Wheel of Games, because I mean, I think what indie games offer is some of the very best of the medium as an artistic form.
And I've never been a huge indie games guy. I've gotten very into a couple of indie games. We talked about Stardew Valley a lot on this show. I love that. That's about as indie as you can possibly get. But it's interesting to see, and hopefully it's all up to randomness. It's all up to the wheel. But I hope to see sort of a smattering of different styles of game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Well, with that said, Miles, are you ready to spin the wheel?
Yeah, need you to share that screen with me.
Oh yeah, we were doing that.
I need eyes on this, baby.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, let's do it. Big money, no whammy.
Wheel of Indies. Our next game will be Monster Prom 3 Monster Road Trip.
Guess who put this on the list?
Oh, I know you did. I know you did. So this is interesting in that this is a sequel game.
I don't know that these games have a narrative, like, you know, I don't think you have to have played 2 to get 3.
It apparently has a whole Monster Prom wiki that that exists. But the game itself does not have its own Wikipedia page, so I can't tell you too much about it.
I know that the first game was kind of a dating sim slash like, I think there's another aspect to it. I remember meeting the devs at PAX way back when. It was probably 2020, actually. Might have been when we went in 2018. I cannot remember, but I do remember wanting to play the game. They didn't, so it wouldn't have been 2020 because they didn't have a copy to play at the time of Monster Prom or Monster Prom 2, whatever they were working on. I've always wanted to play these games, and this one was one that was also in last month's Humble Bundle.
Yeah.
So I am excited
It was also in last month. Should we roll again? Because we're covering 1 month of Humble Bundle.
Well, here's the thing, is it doesn't matter that they were both in the same bundle. That doesn't matter.
Monster Prom 3 Monster Road Trip was released in 2022, so it is a couple of years old now. Beautiful Glitch is the name of the studio that makes these games. They are based out of Barcelona, they've done a lot of their game releases via Kickstarter. So this is unlike Don't Nod, which is a company that is, you know, kind of known but still classifies as indie in certain circles. This, when you're doing Kickstarter stuff, you're you're on the hook. So yeah, Monster Prom 2, Monster Camp, and we are going to be covering the third game, Monster Prom 3 Monster Road Trip, and that's will be next week. And the Wheel of Indies, in the meantime, gang, if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us in a number of places, including themoreyounerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode of the show that we've ever done. You can tweet to us at themoreyounerd. Oh, somebody was trying to find an episode that emailed us or left a message somewhere. Yeah, sometimes the RSS feeds only go back so far. And I got to figure that out. So I apologize to that person that is looking for a very old episode from 13 years ago, but I gotta figure out where that is. Anyway, MoreyNerd.com. You can message us at Blue Sky on Blue Sky at the Morey Nerd. You can email us themoreynerd@gmail.com. That's themoreynerd@gmail.com. And you can, of course, find us on another site called CosmicCrit.com. Cosmic Crit is our other show where Miles and me and all of our friends play the game Starfinder put out by Paizo. It's really awesome. Come check us out. And if you go to CosmicCrit.com, in the upper right-hand corner, you can find a link to the Cosmic Crit Discord, where we have our own little The More You Nerd section there that you can talk to me and Miles all day when we're bored at work. So with that said, gang, we're going to end the show now, as we always do, with a rousing
nerd out. Too nerd for y'all.